The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And on today's show, we have Chris Chu. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a lot we want to talk to you about. Before we get into all that fun stuff, do you mind giving our listeners a background on who you are and how you get into photography?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Chris Chu. I'm from the Bay Area, specifically from a little town called Daly City. And I got into photography like back in 2010. The short story is it was a Chinese New Year dinner, and my relatives always show off like the tech of the year when the iPhone came out. It was an uncle who had that. And then in 2010, it was my cousin Tony who had, I think, his first Canon DSLR. I still can't remember what it was exactly, but he took a photo of me and then he showed me the depth of field effect where I'm in focus on the background. Instantly, like from then, it was love at first sight. I saved up all of my money from like random day camp jobs, random like errand runs and all that jazz. And then I bought my first little pocket point and shoot. Photographed everything in high school for like, I think, 2.5 years before I got my first DSLR, and the rest was history.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay. So that was the short story, the short version. Yeah. when did it all start happening for like the channel? And I know you've like recently found film, right? Talk us through that.
Yeah. So the channel started in March 2020 at the very early days of the lockdown, because I used to be a wedding photographer. I think at this point in 2020, I've been a professional wedding photographer for 4 years.
Oh, how was that?
Oh my God, I'm glad I retired.
Yeah, you know, it's like I also was a professional wedding photographer for like 6 years. And I also feel good at, you know, I'll take them here and there for other people. But yeah, I feel you.
Of course, yeah. Like it's definitely like built for certain people, and average career span of a wedding photographer or videographer, from what I've heard, is 5 years. So you and both made it past the average. So we're pretty cool kids for doing that. And 2020 was looking to be like a pretty big year, because I've been this is my second year of doing full time photography. So 2020 was looking up to be like a really big year, and then lockdown happened, and then I saw all of my deposits for that year, or a lot of my deposits that year, like get rescinded. So I lost 27 grand in 2 days.
Yeah.
And that was a very, like, you know, not so comfortable moment for anybody.
Something similar happened to me. I had just like booked this like ongoing gig with a school. Like the week of the lockdown, I was supposed to go in for I was supposed to do like monthly social media photos for them for like a pretty good rate. And like the week I was supposed to do an event, and do my first like month there. And it was like that 2 days before, like they're like, hey, we're shutting down. And then it disappeared. Like I never was able to get that.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So I feel you there too.
The feeling to see all of that money evaporate is like one of the most sobering moments ever. Yeah. It was like, oh gosh, like now? And that's when the channel started, because I've always considered either teaching workshops for photography, because at that point I've been doing photography for 10 years and now I'm at like 12 and a half or about to be 13. And I was like, oh, you know, like sharing all the things that I've learned would be cool. And like maybe helping someone in their like wedding business would be cool. But specifically in lockdown, I'm like, well, we can't photograph anybody, so I don't want to teach any of that.
Yeah.
And then that was when I was like, okay, maybe photographers can practice photographing themselves, because we are all notoriously awkward and terrible in front of the lens as opposed to behind it. And then that was when things just blew up. And it was a really funny moment, because I was recording all of this in my parents' home, and they were just like hearing me like make a lot of noise in my room. And like they didn't really know what was going on. My parents love watching YouTube. They were watching a lot of van life people and camping, hiking folks on YouTube at this point. And then all of a sudden my video popped up on the recommended.
No way.
And they were like, what the heck is this? And then when they were watching my first self-portrait video, the first one that blew up, I heard it from the living room in my room. And I like ran outside. I'm like, oh my God, what are you guys watching? And they're like, Christopher, you've been making videos in our home. And then like, and stuff like that. And then, that was how the channel started.
Man,
I love it.
Yeah, I didn't realize how new your channel was. I did not realize that. You're really taking off in the last couple of years, man.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. It feels like I've been doing it for a really long time.
Really? Really?
Yeah, like it's been like 2.5 years. And I think in the YouTube game, that might be considered a long time.
Yeah.
But it's not like considered like, well, I mean, like nothing like Marques Brownlee, where he's been doing it for like 10 plus years.
Yeah.
So 2.5 years doesn't seem that long, but to me it does.
Awesome.
So I know you do a lot of teaching on the channel. Is there any, so now that we're out of the scary part of COVID, do you see yourself like doing like a workshop, like in person or anything like that? Cause I think you're very good. I watch your channel sometimes when I'm like, I need to brush up on some stuff. Like I want to know, like I was watching your channel today and I was like, I love how educational it is, whether you're talking about like tech stuff on the camera or like tips and tricks. Like I think it would be cool to like be able to come to something in person. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I've always considered doing in-person stuff again. The first time I've ever done it was for my friends back in the Bay. And the first time I taught about portrait photography, like 25 people showed up. And that was a really fun day.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. Like it was a whole endeavor. Like I had to like plan a really workshop, and it worked out pretty good. It was like a 4 to 5 hour thing, because I brought along friends who would be subjects. I had my 20 or so friends be photographers. And then at the end, I taught them how I would personally edit, and they kind of like put their own spin on that. But now, like after kind of establishing some kind of educational background or educator background, put that in air quotes for people who don't know, but, I don't know, like teaching in person is always going to be like a great thing that I could do.
Yeah.
But I just see a lot of merit to do it online, because it can reach a lot of people. I'm not really sure if what I do now, which is like more doc work, can be taught that well now, because I'm in the very infant stages of doing that. If someone were to ask me about portraiture, yeah, I could teach that. But yeah, I don't know. I think I would always consider an opportunity if it were to like show up on my table.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that's always such a good way to break or to start a YouTube channel. Or, you know, they always say that who wants to watch somebody's daily vlog when they, you know, when it's just their average, we're going to the grocery store, we're going to this, we're going to that. They always suggest that, you know, you kind of bring something to the table that you're good at, and that, you know, that showing tips and tricks of photography or showing this and that always brings people to your channel. And then you can start to kind of unwind. And I've noticed that. Like I love, my favorite video of yours is the half frame camera, where you guys are like passing the camera around. It's like, all right, you're gonna do these shots, you're gonna do these shots. And I'm like, dude, that is such a good idea. Like what a fun video that was. And it's just cool. It's cool to see your channel growth, because I remember I trying to think of when I found it. It was definitely like, I don't know, a year ago or something like that. It was when you got your was the M6 worth it kind of video, stuff. Yeah. Because, you know, we all love, we're Leica heads. We love these Leica cameras. I'll watch anything that has that red dot in it. Right. And I'm just like, oh yeah, oh yeah. And you, I mean, just hit on some great points. Just a good video. You know what I mean? Like, just good stuff.
Yeah, my experience with that M6, the whole like 6.5 or 6 month repair for $1,000 cost situation, that was a rough one. That was extremely rough. But yeah, like going back to what you said earlier, yeah, like compared to like people who usually want to like resort to daily vlog, they want to do vlogs first before they find something.
Yeah.
For me, like I always wanted to, yeah, like provide value. Because I know my life is really not that interesting from a day-to-day basis. Yeah. Like I can't be like one of those really cool people on the platform. So I try to like combine principles of like, yeah, like providing value for someone and not waste their time. Because one of the biggest irks that I had with some like teachers like during 2017, 2018, YouTube photography was that if they were trying to teach you 5 things, they vlog in between it them going somewhere. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I don't care that you're going to go get pizza right now. I wanted to teach it very efficiently, but also like in a way where I'm like speaking to you like a friend, not like, oh, I'm going to read bullet points and you're going to follow along. I wanted to make it very personable. Fun fact, actually, I don't script any of my videos. Like it's all off the top of the dome. So if you ever see the raw recording of anything, I stutter like crazy, but I love to have like my actual regular intonation and my regular pacing and cadence to reach you so that you feel I'm like being spoken with, not talked to
type of thing.
And and the last chair on top would be, I didn't want to be a gatekeeper because I've had so many experiences of that. Like when I was starting out with photography. So there are like videos out there on my channel where I like talk about an approximate number that I've made through photography and how one could achieve that and like actual practical things that I've done that have worked for me. But, you know, also putting a disclaimer that it might not work for you. It's just like part of my passion to make a lot of these things accessible, kind of like the half frame camera. Just to show that like, oh, film photography can be shared among your friends. It doesn't always have to be like we like a Leica or something like that.
Yeah. So is the Leica, what made you want to try, like get your feet wet with film? Was it, were you just like, I'm going to go all in and get the Leica first? Or did you try other things? Or like, what was that like?
Yeah, great question. I got into film because of an old buddy of mine from way back when, and he was doing it for a while. And I saw like a photo that he took of me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how did you get that exposure to like, how'd you get the sky, the shadows and all that stuff to look so clean? I'm like, I can't get that so naturally on my R5. And then we were just kind of talking about that. And then the first 35mm camera I got was the Canon P, and I got it with the Shuedo camera black paint look. But the black paint crumbled so fast. It was so sad. No. But anyways, it was really fun to get back into it because I learned photography through film back in 2012 through a high school class, and that was fun. We had the whole darkroom experience, all that jazz.
Oh,
I was terrible at it, so bad, but it was still fun. And so it went from the Canon P to the Pentax X45 to the RB67 Pro SD, and that I stayed on that for a long time because I still and back then loved 6.7 format. It's just awesome.
Beautiful.
Life looks way better through ground glass. We can all agree with that. Yep. We could live in that chamber. It'd be a miracle. But and then the M6 came after the RB. Oh, actually, no. I had a Besa R2A first. And that was a really fun camera. But the thing that, I mean, that camera like is a like just packed with features. The light meter is insane. It's awesome. Mm. And the reason why I changed was when I started to dabble in street photography, the shutter was so loud on that camera that people would always like look back towards me.
Oh, whoa.
I would immediately start having anxiety. And I'm like, I can't do this. So with the M, it was a lot quieter. And I've gone unnoticed much more often.
Right.
Yeah, they're so quiet. It's so
so quiet, and it looks so beautiful.
It is
anywhere.
What do you think about the re-release? Speaking of Leica,
oh, great question. I got some opinions about that. Okay, all right. We're gonna get into some takes. So the M6 re-release was That was kind of a surprise because I saw rumors that they'd made something affordable and accessible to people. It's accessible to people because they're going to constantly make it. There's no limited run. But I heard they are going to make a 500 piece limited run, something like that. I'm glad that they brought it back in brass. Because like after the M4, they stopped making it in brass. They made it in zinc or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. I really actually like heavy cameras like the RZ.
Yeah, especially because it feels more.
Yeah, it feels great. Like substantial.
Substantial. Yeah. Thank you. That's the word.
Yeah. Like it's nice to know that like your camera feels durable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a personal preference, of course, it varies case by case. So that's cool. But if we're going to be real, right, here it comes. If we're going to be real, it is for sure an MP reskin. It is literally like the MP. Huh. They smacked on M6 branding on it. So it kind of like, you know, attracts the people who are M6 fans. The price point is a little bit ridiculous. It's kind of a joke, but you know, to each his own. I even considered getting it because I was like, maybe I kind of want a mint M6 for when like my two M6s die. But yes, go.
I will say, the price is kind of, I mean, it makes sense. The price is, I mean, I wasn't expecting it to be like, you know, $1,200. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes. Like, it wasn't going to be like what it was back in the 80s or 90s for sure.
But you think about the price, when it was then, with inflation, that's what it would cost now.
Oh, like, is that right? I didn't do the inflation calculator.
Yeah, so it's like technically the same price.
Okay. So with that in mind.
But I understand. It's rough. It's like, it hurts because we all want it, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like a self-contradicting thing. Kind of like, I don't know if you guys remember when the Apple XDR display was released. Yeah. They kind of botched it in the way that they announced it, where there's like, this is a $5,000 monitor. But if you want it with a stand, it's $6,000. Yeah, so like, it's just like, what the heck are they doing? So with the M6, they're like, we are going to make film a lot more accessible.
Yeah.
For $5,500. This is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Just say that you're re-releasing the M6 for $5,500. Don't say that it's accessible because this is going to be misconstrued.
Yeah.
Which it did. The rollout was kind of like a little weird, but you know, as the dust settles, people are still going to buy it. Like, let's be honest. Right. Like, people will complain for 6 months, but then they'll think about it.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about it.
I've been like, what can I sell? Like, you know what? I mean, I have so many cameras. I mean, I was just telling you, Timothy, yesterday. I was like, okay, like but then this is the other problem because I was going through like, okay, I could let this go and then this go. And he's like, well, you can't let that go. And I was like, I can't let that. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? It's rough.
Yeah. It's a very pretty camera.
Oh,
it is nice to kind of like
beautiful
either like use it to death like how you would with like any current M6 out there,
right? Mm-hmm.
But what I'm kind of afraid of is if the build quality is going to be the same, because I haven't touched it yet, nor have I met someone who has used it yet. I spoke to like some of the some like quote-unquote old heads who have like used like for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they're nervous about the same thing where like Leica back then, hypothetically speaking, we're more about the passion for photography, and this could be a money grab. I don't blame any company for going for a money grab. That's just how business works. But it might feel different. It might sound different.
Yeah.
Of course, it's like going to be very minute to anybody who doesn't really care about that stuff. But for like fan people like us, like we might see that or we might like feel that. And we're like, it's not like the 92 version. It's not like the da 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 da. But yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I do want to like try it out and see what it feels like.
I'm just excited because, I mean, for the you know, it's one of those things for the community, the fact that a company is making a new film camera in 2022 is very important. Also for people who want the experience of like buying a brand, like we can buy a brand new M6 and like open it brand new.
Yeah.
You know, that's like pretty crazy.
Yeah, that experience is going to be amazing for anybody who either jumps into the game like new or even like people who have already owned an M6. They're like, oh my gosh, it's just like back when.
Yeah.
Or for someone like me, I've never opened a mint M6 before. It's going to be fun.
And it also is promising that all the M6 that are currently out there will be able to be fixed because they'll be making these parts again.
Yes, that is very true. Although it is very interesting that Leica's putting down the hammer for right to repair. Like they're going to stop selling parts or allowing third party people to repair because people in the community.
True?
Yeah, they're going to stop selling those parts.
That doesn't
to
seem
like YYE or DAG or whatever, or whoever is repairing these cameras now. And that kind of sucks because of the story that I shared with my video where like it took me 6 months and $1,000 to repair a light leak.
Did you send it right to them?
Yeah, it was a rookie move. I sent it right to them. And like, this was during, I think, yeah, this was during 2021, I think. So it was still like kind of pandemic-y around world. And things were a lot slower, as we all can remember or still now experience. But yeah, I hope, you know, they could fix that repair time, because 6 months without a camera is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
Whereas the third party guys, they do it in like 3 weeks, and it's still pretty good.
Yeah. It's hard to be without your camera for any amount of time. I had to send my M4 in when I first got it, just because I don't know if it was having problems or I just wanted to get it CLA'd because it was new to me, you know? And it took like two and a half, 3 weeks. And every day I was like checking, like, is it back? Is it back? Is it back? Is it back? And I thought I was having issues with, I thought it wasn't advancing, but I think I'm okay. So I'm like, man, I'm going to have to send it back again. But no, I think I'm good. Oh, so thankfully I won't be without it.
I hope it's smooth. Yeah, it's tough to send those babies back for repair. Oof.
I think my only take on the whole situation of the M6, just like, they're handmade. It's not a manufactured camera. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's hundreds of parts in this thing. And, it, you know, each piece has to be machined. And I feel like if Leica did a camera that was... I'm trying to think of what are, I think if they put a camera out at any price, if they put a camera out at $2,500, people would still be hooing and hawing over the price. Mm-hmm. And it's like when they have such like a brand, well, it's their branding, you know what I mean? It's a Leica. It's like they're meant to be like your workhorse, your, and I always looked at it too. I remember what it was like to not have a Leica, you know what I mean? And then I went through a phase of having two Leicas.
What a dark time.
yeah, it was just crazy. And like, what a proud moment it is when you can finally, you know, I think we all forget too, like we could all probably afford Leicas if we weren't buying every other camera and every other new thing all the time. Like, we're like, well, I'll get this and then maybe I'll get a Leica later. And it's like, no, man, just save your money, shoot that little camera that you have and stuff.
Plus, like Sony, whatever the heck they are. They're like 6,000.
yeah, whatever the heck they are.
I don't even know. What are they? Sony ARS? Well, I don't shoot Sony, so I don't
A7R,
know.
It don't matter.
You can make
as many jokes as you want, and I would support it.
but you know, those are $5,000, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Something like that. Yeah.
So I've paid a lot of money for digital gear, so.
I'm still happy, again, that they're making new cameras and that, you know, it's hope. It's, and again, I've seen on other interviews and other talking points on the M6 that maybe this will, you know, spark the Nikons and the Canons to put out a new SLR or a new rangefinder, or heaven forbid, a new point and shoot camera. How crazy would that be to actually have?
Oh my god, that's
that would be nuts if Olympus like start doing that again.
Dude, it'd be insane. People would literally poop their pants if that happened.
Oh, absolutely. If only like Mamiya was still around and didn't get dissolved by phase one. Mamiya dying is like, I mean, like I was there like when it happened, but it's so sad, like, because I'm a huge fan of the cameras.
Me too.
That
yeah.
It's nuts. So
it's like Contax. Mamiya could come back.
Yeah, it's like Contax. Contax's design is probably the best in the game.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. Man.
And these cameras weren't cheap when they came out, too.
Oh, no,
weren't. I think we forget that like, we were picking up these in the dirt days of film photography. You know, we were grabbing these cameras and it's like, oh, I remember when I got my Contax T2 for $300.
Yeah, it's everybody's favorite story to be like, oh, I paid $1,200 for my M6. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
I remember when Adam from Film Objective told me that he bought two RZs for and like a whole set of lenses for like $350.
Yeah.
Back when he was in college, I think, like way before Film Objective started. And I was just pissed because I think I like dropped a good amount of money for mine. I forgot.
I have the flip side of that. I sold my Mamiya 645 AFD for $800.
Mm. How much are they worth now?
They were worth $4,500 when I got it brand new. It was for school. Part of our tuition was in enrollment. It was, we had to get that camera because they had a deal with Mamiya back in 2004. Yeah, everybody on the first day of school, we all opened our Mamiya art like cameras together. And I still remember crystal clear in my head, they threw your boxes in the middle of the, so we all like threw the boxes, like, I don't know why aren't we told to keep those? I don't know. But yeah, I sold it for $800, and now those are like $2,500, I think.
And she never sold another camera again after that.
Because I'm traumatized. I hold on to everything.
Same.
So, me too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I saw that you just put out a little book.
I know. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. It was a huge process of mostly imposter syndrome that I had to go through. Have you guys both pushed out your own zines and books?
Yeah, zines. I haven't gotten to the book period yet, but that's next. That's next on the list.
Did imposter syndrome ever hit you guys like that hard before?
I would say definitely. And then almost to the point where like I didn't want to put it out, you know? You know? Same thing you went through actually. Like you're like, okay, I made this thing. I'm like, is this even good though?
Yeah. Yeah. Like honestly, it's just it just sneaks up on you and just like hits you over the head. It's hard. Like, what about you, Tim? What was your process like?
Well, the first two zines that I did, I had really good feelings about them. Like, I was kind of proud of the work and the way they were pushed through. This last one that I did was kind of like a different take on stuff that normally I release black and white street photography portraits, you know, that kind of stuff. And this last book was color, weird, like it was just a totally different thing. And it wasn't so much an imposter syndrome. It was like, are people even gonna like this? Because like most people enjoy my black and white stuff and I'm doing something that's completely different. And I ended up really loving it. Like every time I'm digging in my junk drawer and I see one of the copies that came when I like my test copies, and I'm like, this is kind of cool. Like, why didn't I do this more?
I mean,
it's like an acquired taste type thing. I think the longer you sit with it and kind of hang out with it, you kind of, you accept it and enjoy it, the process.
Yeah. Well, I have another question for you. Sorry, I don't mean to hijack your podcast.
No.
But if you both have if you both have like put out more than one photo book, and more specifically like a photo book that was centered around people and centered around something that wasn't people focused, like say for example landscapes or cityscapes or whatever, did you guys feel more imposter syndrome with the other? Like, was it easier to put out a portrait type book, or was it easier to put out a cityscape landscape type? Like, what do you guys think?
I was gonna say it kind of goes back to like wedding albums, you know?
Okay.
Like portrait books felt natural. I haven't put out a portrait book, but I've been really inspired by portrait books lately.
Yeah.
That if I ever, I have a lot of things in my brain that I want to do before another zine, but I think a portrait book would be something that I want to try next. If that makes sense. But
yes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because my one zine is just about like my love for Los Angeles. And there's not really any portraits in it, I don't think, or any pictures of people maybe. But yeah, sorry, I got a little.
Oh, no worries. So portraits come a lot more naturally for you because
either
because of your background or like your personality. So do you think that you would struggle more pushing work out that comes naturally?
No, I probably would. I'd probably be more comfortable, I feel like. Yeah.
I'm the complete opposite because I'm a huge portrait person.
Yeah.
And this book was extremely hard for me to put out.
But here's the thing. It's like I was thinking about the couple and like, because we just had a baby 9 months ago. And if I had
that's
that,
right.
Like if somebody did that for me, I mean, they're like the two luckiest people that had that experience with you, you know?
I love that story.
You're like,
No. Like, I accept that. I accept that. But I just kept forgetting like the vision or like the reason why I was doing it is for them. But like creative wise, I'm like, is this even good enough to give to them? Because they mean so much to me. And this is like their story in their life. And in any documentary, you could mess up in like telling a story. You could like make them seem like completely off from like what actually happened. And I was afraid that I was going to misrepresent them or artistically like just botch the whole thing where people would be like, why the heck do they look like this? Or like, why did you make that creative decision? Or the composition is making it look way more dramatic than it really was. All these questions like came into my head. But Tim, let's get back to you.
So I'm such a weird, photography has never been my like bread and butter, you know what I mean? So I don't ever have to look at it that way. I'm just kind of like, if I snag some portraits or if I'm feeling kind of frisky and want to go do some portraits one day, you know, there's no like pressure of whatever happens kind of happens. And I feel like that lends so well to it. You know, I remember the last senior portrait, I did try to do it, you know, I dipped my toes into like doing paid work and stuff. And my last senior portrait session, that was it. Like, I was just like, this is terrible. Like, telling a person, sorry if you're listening, I don't mean that you were terrible. it was like, just I, you know, working with people that aren't models and or just no concept of you know, how light should hit them and stuff like that. It's just so stressful. And I'm such a like a yes man that it's so hard. I'll just take what I can get. And that's not what you need to be when you're a professional photographer. You need to grab it and make it happen, you know? And I'm just a, well, I guess that's good enough. All right. Thank you. You know? And so that's why I love, you know, street portraits or working with friends. Like the portrait stuff that I've done has always felt like really good. And I mean, as in like non-paid, hanging out, just trying to make art, you know, portraits and like love that stuff. And maybe if work kind of felt more like that, I would be a little more into it and not so caged up. But, you know, I just have to do more of it. Like I have
to say, you have to do more of it. And you also have to like present it as not a traditional, like a lot of people say, I'm not, if you're looking for this, that's not me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like approach a portrait session like you would like a street.
Yeah.
Portrait, you know what I mean? That'd be really cool, actually, Timothy. I think you should
do that.
And
that's how, like the stuff with the contortionist girl that I've done. I went at it as a, like a rock show, you know, I was running around her, getting crazy angles, laying on the floor, going underneath her, like, like that stuff I'm into, the whole tripod strobes, you know, beep, and it's done. Like, that's just not, I'm not getting anything out of that. You know what I mean? Like, I need to be physical with my stuff. So putting out like a landscapey, or I always call them my like depressing house photos and stuff like that. It's like the, you know, moody sky, dark lit, one light on, you know, like that's usually what I end up doing because I don't see that many people since I've moved where I can shoot them all the time, you know? So I'm trying to, we've kind of been flushing out what I want to do with my photography on this show throughout the last couple months, I feel like, of where now I want to, I've been talking with a lot of like old friends of doing kind of like family photography, but like my style of doing it, like catching them in like a cool aspect or like running around and not your traditional, you know, sitting on your steps on the front porch, holding your baby kind of like, no, let's throw the baby in the air and let me take some shots of it or something like that.
Chris B, are you up for that idea?
I was like, is it going to be me, the first one?
Come on, Ben.
Now, Timothy, I really think you should take, you need to take a trip to New York and like do some street photography out there.
Yeah, because
you're so close and like we've seen the Tennessee stuff. I would love to see your like New York street photography.
Yeah, I need to just go bro it down for a couple weeks and... After the holiday season, I'm cooking something up. I want to get back out to you guys in LA and I want to go up and, and hang out with like Pauly B and all them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is fun. I never get to talk about myself.
Oh, I love reciprocating the energy. Thanks for letting me ask the questions. Yeah.
So now that you have your first book in the bank, is the imposter syndrome over? Are you ready to be like, okay, and I'm going to do this a completely different way. I'm going to do a completely different zine. Or you're like, nah,
I need a break. Great question. I am... ready. Wow, that did not sound confident at all. I'm very ready to push out my second book. It's just a matter of curating it. So I think I see kind of like my photo book path, at least like from the point of recording now, at the time of recording, I mean, is I see kind of like how album artists or music artists kind of like list out or map out their discography. So like for someone like Taylor Swift, for example, a lot of like her discography is like following her like maturity in life or her experiences in her like love life. For other people, it follows like either like the world, kind of like Kendrick Lamar, like when he was like kind of expressing like his thoughts about battling with fame and then becoming a leader in his community. And then now like dealing with like things that he learned in therapy, stuff like that. So I kind of like see my mapping of my, I guess, printed work as like a music discography, because music has a huge influence on my life and in my photography. So I would see this like one of one photo book that I made for my friends as kind of like my free project that like I would share with people to kind of like get rid of the, imposter syndrome, the nerves about making a first photo book, because I think all of us can like relate with, oh my gosh, it's our first project. It has to be extremely good. There's so much pressure. Like this is the first published piece of work of my thoughts, feelings, and expression that's going to be consumed by someone physically. So I've got to make it all this stuff and whatever. Yeah. So like now that I got that out of the way, now I can like feel freer, lighter to create how I want. And the second one is going to be about a lot of the groups of people that I've met overseas, like in a project that I'm working on right now. It's still like in the realm, more so in the realm of documentary photography, which I love because it combines my love for people, which is my first art form, I would say, and it combines photography, which is my second art form. But photography always serves as a great vehicle to meet people. And the way that I'm seeing it right now is, and like I'll express this more in a later work of art, is my vocabulary is getting a lot worse with each passing year. And I've noticed that. Like, I used to be a really smooth speaker, more like SAT filled, like more intellectual, thought-provoking, conversational person. But as the years went on, when I devoted a lot more energy into becoming an artist in photography, I've become a worse speaker. So I used to be a lot more talkative in group settings, but now I listen a lot more, and it has helped a lot in context of being an artist, but also being a better friend or a better partner. If someone were to ask me what I thought about certain issues, I've become a lot worse in expressing it because I'm still processing, or I've become a slower processor in what I'm observing now. So all that to say, sorry, this might be long-winded.
No, this is very interesting.
As my photography skills have grown, that has been my way of speaking and listening. So if I were to hang out with you two in the room right now, I wouldn't take out my camera for the first 30 to 45 minutes, even if you look splendid in lighting or splendid in the setting. I would let it go, even though if it hurts me so much. Whoa. I'm like, damn, that would have been a good photo, but whatever, it's okay. Because if I start photographing you from what I deem to be too early, that's just me talking at you. And we all have experience of, we've all had bad experiences with like people who just talk at you. Like, they're not interested in listening to you at all. So if I'm like starting to shoot what I feel like to be too early, that's what it would feel like to me. But after like maybe 45 minutes where like I feel like I've gotten to know you more, I've asked you questions about who you are because I'm genuinely interested in you, not because I want to like establish rapport or anything, then I start holding my camera like next to my face because I know my zones, I know my settings, everything. And then I just fire away like either underneath my chin or next to my face. I don't obstruct my face at all. And that's when my good photographs happen. And that's how I start speaking. And that's how I start listening with the world. So my vocabulary has gone a lot worse, but my conversations through photography has gone so much better. And you can see that in my work. Or actually, I can see that in my work. I don't know if anybody else can see that. It's been a strange process because I sometimes feel like I come off very unintellectual in certain contexts, and I get asked many questions anymore, which is fine. That's fine. Like, I like listening to people, but when it comes to the moment of speaking, to the moment of listening, it's usually done through a camera. And then you see my body of work, and the way that I would tell it is, this is how I'm listening to you through this.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I was just thinking when you were saying that, like, I'm a very shy person. So when I have my camera, you know, if I'm job that I've booked and I have to like go, you know, do the job, it's more comfortable for me to start off with like, okay, and then just start shooting and like talking with the camera here in front of me, because it's like a protection. Like, if I were to start with like, oh, like, let's talk first, I think I'd get more nervous knowing I had to like do that part first, you know? So that's like super interesting that you start with that. Which, I mean, probably makes for better photographs.
But I've missed opportunities, you know, countless opportunities to photograph someone in a very interesting way. And I can still remember certain frames that I was like, I should have taken the photo. Maybe they wouldn't have minded if I did. But looking back on every single experience I've had in like either like small doc projects or the bigger ones I'm working on right now, it was worth it to miss those shots, because the ones that I ended up getting were still fantastic. It's kind of weird how that has like worked with me. I used to be an extremely gregarious person, but now I'm a lot quieter in a different way, in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, because coming from like a documentary side, it is so easy to just start firing off right away and not really getting your bearings on stuff. Like, that's just one thing I really want to, I want to find a long-term project. You know, since leaving Franklin, I left one really long-term project behind I'm ready to start kind of sifting through that and finding what the story is that I want to tell with that work. And I don't know what the new story is going to be. So, and I like that approach. I like kind of just going in and, you know, sitting down and introduce. I mean, it's kind of like when we, before we hit record on this podcast, we usually like to kind of sit down and introduce the show and stuff, and not just like, all right, hey, you know, like, we're ready to go. There's such just to kind of loosen up and let go. And you can usually hear too, a lot of our episodes where, you know, 30 minutes in, things really start to open up.
And like now, exactly.
Yeah. It's just neat. It's a really good idea. I think I need to practice that as well.
I feel like, at least for my, speaking from personal experience, is that just like having a sense of a very strong sense of identity and like who you are actually like helps the greatest work of art come out of you. Because I personally have participated in, you know, following trends through Instagram or following like this person who I extremely admire. And then like after I've kind of like thrown away a lot of like the chasing and like kind of like letting my identity kind of like seep out through my work, that's what has allowed me to kind of turn into the person that I am now, where I find it extremely fascinating to hear about other people, especially like you two, like in this moment right now. Like I have so many questions that I want to ask you, but I don't know if we have enough time for that. And it is your podcast, so I can't really do that. But still, like it's just like, this is what I truly enjoy. I used to like love, you know, the whole chasing the light type thing. But now it's like really getting to know people, because that is my number one art form, which is conversing with people. I think people are extremely interesting. People have been constantly ignored and they don't even get the typical how are you anymore.
Wow. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. I mean, anywhere you go, like whether it's like a doctor's office or where, I don't remember where I was the other day, but like everybody, like even on set, like when I'm on set, like people, when it's light exchanging or whatever, everybody's just like boop into their phone. And like back in the day, you had to talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Like you had to. And like, I'm sure you made a lot more friends. Like people made a lot of friends because their heads were up and they were like, oh, I love your outfit. Or like, I love, like, what book is that? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I read that. Don't you love, like, I feel like that is like non-existent anymore. And it's like, really,
it's a lot harder to come by, you know? That type of experience it is.
And for somebody like me who's shy, it makes it harder if somebody's not like open. Like I would love to, you know, I've sort of have like tried to, because that irks me so much, I've tried to be like, oh, like, how's your day going? With somebody's heads down, you know, and they boop, pop right up like, oh, pretty good actually, or whatever, you know, like.
There are so many unheard groups of people out there. Like I just came back from a really big outing out in Africa.
Can you talk about it yet?
I can't talk about too many details of it. Sorry. The earliest that I will hear back about it is in January. So we might be able to revisit that like when that comes. Hopefully, you know, like if it doesn't come out, then you'll actually never hear about it. But like there are certain groups of people who have experienced, like, you know, people, teams of people showing up on their front doorstep, and a lot of charity work is done, and then the charity people just leave. And it's, you know, that's a huge problem in my opinion. But through my experience, like in the way that I kind of operate, I literally kind of like pull them aside away from the crowd. And I'm just asking like, oh, like, tell me about this. Like, this is fascinating. And the way that they respond is so interesting, because it seems like they've never been asked to talk about themselves. Wow. Because there was this one guy who I met in, I think it was Luderitz in Namibia. And he was running a, okay, now I'm talking about details, but like he's running a very, very like makeshift community farm next to a sewage treatment plant. And he has a huge story about why he did it. But when I asked him about it, when I pulled him aside, he just kept going. And sometimes people are very like, okay, like, please stop talking. But I was just like, wow, this is nuts. He was extremely passionate. And the thing that he said that still rings, or like resonates with me to this day.
There you go.
Is he said, I want this, meaning the farm and what he's doing, I want this to be the clearest example of someone who knows what they want to do in this life. And that was like a great reminder of, I guess, like artists or anybody in general, like, do I even know what I want to do? Do I know what I'm about? Do I have a strong sense of identity? And I feel like I could say yes to all those things. But for all of us artists, like, we constantly struggle with, imposter syndrome that makes us make unnecessary micro adjustments or whatever. But like for that guy, he knew what he was going to do. He knew he's going to do this for years.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a very clear image. So I want my art to be the same thing, to allow people to speak, to allow people to talk about things that nobody has ever asked them. And to kind of, I guess that could be my gift to the world, is like, hey, go speak. I want to listen.
Now, with your listening, are you journaling or like recording this?
Good
or
question.
Are you just kind of soaking it in the memory, or what's your method of that?
More so the latter, kind of soaking it in and remembering it to be, and hopefully I could get a photo that could help me remember it.
Yeah.
Because photos are huge, obviously, tools to remember. So is music. So I try to make like playlists for like different times of my life that would help me remember that thing.
Oh, cool.
I wish I always had an audio That's recorder great. On me, but I'm not good with
you
audio.
You do, your phone. Well,
okay, my phone could be one. For actually,
yeah,
duh.
Totally.
So, yeah, so I'll start doing that. But yeah.
Light bulb.
I only bring that up because I recently was like, because speaking of music, Adele, her album where she's like in one of her sad songs, you hear her voice memo, like a little diary of like how she's feeling. And I was like, oh, I should have done that like during my pregnancy or like literally anytime now because my son is here.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway.
Absolutely. I feel like that's a great thing that we could all do for sure.
See, I think about that a lot because I always get picked on at work because I let the customers that come in, like I work at a music store, everybody, there's so many walks of life that come into this place. There's been some customers that have come in where I've talked to them for like an hour and a half, and just let them, some people, like you were saying, just want to talk. They want to be heard. They don't get to talk or be heard.
Especially the older generation.
Yeah, and it usually is. It's definitely like they're, and they have some of the greatest stories, and I feed off of that. And they always laugh at me. They're like, "Oh man, you got stuck in that one." And it's like, "Well, no, man. I was like, for that guy told me he, you know, fought in the Korean War and then he went to Vietnam and then he went to this and he went to that and he did this and now he's doing that." I was like, "How interesting is that?" And we always see him come in here. He buys the same pack of strings for his guitar and he leaves and he never says anything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we always wonder because he's wearing like, you know, a veteran's hat or a this or you know, there's just, I don't know.
Get a portrait of him, Timothy.
Yeah. See, that's next too. Cause I don't know where, maybe who I was talking to about this. Like at my old job, I was like shoving my camera in my coworker's face all the time. Like I always had like an Olympus Epic in my back pocket, or I'm even setting up my 4x5 in the middle of the kitchen and people are like, "Tim, like, stop doing this. Like, get out of here." and like now with this job, I like lost my courage of that or something. Like something happened where, you know, I'll grab some cell phone shots or something like that, but I still lug a bag that weighs 57 pounds with four cameras in it to work with me every day because that's just who I am. And like I really got to gain that courage again of pulling out my camera. And there's this guy Kevin Coolman or Cool, anyway, there's this guy that comes in and he's a real character, plays in the dirty bar circuit, has lived a lifetime, like just looks like Poison and Motley Crue are his favorite band. And like, he looks amazing. Like he is the pinnacle of rock and roll. And it's funny because we're in a town of 5,000 people in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know. I need to get back to work.
So the thing about this next project, is going to be a whole anthology of a lot of the people that I've met across like the world. And I've never thought I would have an opportunity like this. I think that it's been a huge blessing to one, be able to like see different places, see different people, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like allowing me to, but basically what I'm trying to say is everything that we will learn from like other people, whether it's through a conversation or through the way that they act, definitely like leaves an imprint on us, one, and everybody knows that. But two, for myself personally, it's making me a better photographer and artist because of it improves my listening skills and my participation in kind of honoring different cultures. So for one example, one person tried to teach me their language up in Norway. It's the Sami people, and I will be revisiting them in the winter.
Wow.
They are originally Mongolian people who have traveled up to Norway during the Ice Age because everything used to be one landmass. So when I saw them for the first time, I was like, "Oh my God, you look Asian. This is insane. Like, what are you doing up here?" So like, it was interesting. And when they were kind of like teaching me their language, I tried my hardest, and I will say that I botched the language, one, but two, like just to see how much a stranger's effort can mean to someone is like an irreplaceable thing. So Chris, if I were to meet you in real life, in person, and I were to like ask you about your family, obviously we like speak the same language, but like I would love to just like hear about everything of like how you got into what you did, how you started this podcast, what you want to do, all this other stuff. And that is like an application of like what I'm learning through all of my pursuits of like just listening to people, just listening, just let go, just let them speak. And all this stuff this whole project is a culmination of like how I'm listening. But the thing that will kind of be present as a theme is there is no lesson that I'm trying to teach here. There is no lesson. Those are the greatest music albums that I've listened to. We're at the end of a concept, or we're at the end of like some musical journey. This person doesn't really teach anything. They're just saying they're lost in this world as well. And they're still struggling with different things. And for me, I've seen galleries and photo books where the photographer is trying to say like, all right, this is my journey from point A, this is my journey to point B.
Yeah.
And this is what we should do with the world. And yes, there are great photographers who can do that. There are great speakers who can do that. But for myself in the stage of my life right now, I don't know what I want to be like telling in a lesson or educational. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I know as someone who is in his mid 20s, I'm 26. I have so much to figure out that I feel like I don't have a position or a platform to say, this is what we need to do. This is what has to be done. Like when you see these photos, we gotta do something. It's like for me, you will see like in the body of work when it does come out that you can tell that I'm just here experiencing it, but it's so much to like process that I don't know what to do. And I think that is a very human experience that some people are actually refusing to experience because everybody wants to seem like they know about everything and that they have an answer for everything. But my favorite musical artist that I've kind of adopted again is the ones who have admitted that they have no solution. This is what I'm experiencing in my life, and this is what I'm sharing. So take it and interpret it as you will. And that's kind of like how I'm approaching my next big project that will be coming out hopefully next year.
Amazing. Beautiful. Well, we will definitely be hoping it all, you know, falls into place for you because it sounds amazing. Crossed. It also sounds like you should maybe have a some sort of chat show interview type. I'm serious. And I don't,
I mean,
whether it's on your channel or if it's like, even if it's just like, you know, kind of like former guest Sissy does, she'll ask like, people that she photographs, like, okay, well, what's your one piece of advice you would give somebody? Or like even something like that, where like you make work with these people, but then you're like, okay, and I want to set up a mic and I want to talk and I want to listen.
Yeah.
I would be down to watch that.
But yeah, I think we should start incorporating something like that. A little bit of that. That would be a fantastic element to involve. But
yeah,
again, as all the listeners can tell, my vocabulary is very bad. I'm not that smooth of a speaker, so they'll probably say like, "This
one, you're doing great.
You're selling yourself."
I don't think so. I speak in run-on sentences. There is no punctuation in my thought.
We all do.
People are like very eloquent, and like when I like watch either their YouTube videos or listen to their podcasts, I'm like, these are complete thoughts. These are declarative sentences with a little bit of interrogative, like, you know, structure. But for me, I'm just like, and this is what I feel like. He's talking too fast.
You got this.
Thanks.
Yeah, you got this. Okay, aside from that project, where do you see the channel going? Are you gonna keep it kind of on the same path? Do you have any like ideas for that, or do you have any
this I could reveal for sure, but I mean, like the path that I'm on right now is I'm just trying to cross that 100k, you know, get that plaque, you know, the great achievement of every I'm super close, but it's a snail race and it sucks. So what I'm like just planning to do is still like trying to like get better at street photography, maybe like share some tips about that, do some really goofy like gear reviews. There is one video that I'm working on right now. It's called the 9 types of film photographers, and that's going to be a huge undertaking. It's going to be an extremely short video. It might be like 2.5 minutes long, just exploring the 9 types that I've observed, but it's going to be like a comedic jab to the community.
Yeah. I can't wait to be like, I'm number five.
Yeah. And I think, like it'll be like good, because sometimes the film community, we can be a little corny. We can be a little goofy in our own ways, but some people are a little bit sensitive to being made fun of. So I'm just like, come on, we got to laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's one video I want to put out. Another one that I want to put out is, yeah, like more like reviews of like more obscure Leica stuff because I'm a huge Leica fanboy. So that'll be fun. Yeah, an M5 review is on the way. That's going to be a fun one. Wait.
Yes.
Flash forward to when you're like, okay, so I got the M6 and the new M6. Like,
yeah. So yeah, I still want to do that. But eventually it'll start to show more of my doc work and process. Because I definitely like want to like be more in that zone, like almost like all encompassing everything that I do.
I'm excited for that.
So that'll be cool.
Yeah.
And the third big project, the book is my next big project. The one after that is going to be all about scale. So like I'm going to be working on like a lot of huge 100 to 1,000 person like projects that'll be like really fun to do, because this is like ramping up to, again, like trying to still get closer to the unity of photography and people. And I feel like LA is a great place to do it because, one, there are fantastic people in the industry that can make ideas come to life. Mm-hmm. That is an absolute fact. Two, there's a lot of space to do a lot of creative work. In New York, you could do it, but it is a little crowded. I will say that much. Same in the Bay. So LA has a lot of space to do that. And three, I think that there are just cool people in this town to collaborate with to make this happen, because obviously one person can't do everything, even though we all try to. But yeah, that'll be a huge thing that I'll also show on the channel as well, because I think it could be a cool thing to show. Yeah.
Amazing.
Man, excited. Yeah. For that.
So it's a whole hodgepodge full of thing. It's not going to follow one theme because that's just who I am. I can't do one thing for too long.
I love that though.
That's good though.
It's interesting.
Yeah,
exactly.
You got to spice it up. We'll be right back with a listener question for Chris right after this message from our sponsor.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Patreon-only Develop and Hang Nights. Now, we've done a bunch of these already. We develop some film, we talk shop, we have fun. We also try to get a former guest for these. So again, if that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to support the show. All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from alex.35mm underscore. I just wanted to make sure I got that in there. And they wanted to know if you could shoot alongside another street photographer from the past, who would it be?
This question.
Oh, that's that is interesting. You know, the reason why it's interesting to me is because a lot of the greats, they shot alone. So to have someone next, or a lot of street photographers.
So true. Yep.
Yeah, they
yep.
they love to be yeah, alone yeah, because, yeah. you know, they move at their own pace. But if I were to pick right. one, I mean, he's still alive. Bruce Gilden, that guy is one of the most
legend.
Interesting personality-wise and artistic-wise. One of the
I don't think I know him. Okay,
so to give you like kind of like the nutshell of like what most people know him as is he's a huge dude out in New York. Who goes up yeah. super close to people and blasts them with a flash while...
Oh, wait, flash. No, I yeah, do yeah, know him. Yeah, I do yeah.
And the first
I was going to say, you know who he
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah. yeah a yeah, lot yeah. of people know who Bruce Gilden is. And the first impression that he gives off is, yeah, he's kind of a... Oh, that he's a jackass. so, like, yeah, like, that's yeah, the first yeah, impression yeah. that most people get. But if you, like, start to study his work, a lot of... I think his book is called Lost and Found. I could be wrong, and a lot of people are going to kill me for that. But in his book, there's actually a lot of photos that don't exhibit... like being in your face with a flash. He is like in your face with the camera. But one thing that most people don't understand is that Bruce Gilden spends an incredible amount of time with certain groups of people on different corners or like different neighborhoods and stuff like that. So they yeah. know him.
Yep. Yep.
He's not just like a stranger yeah. or like some kind of like outsider that is going in, interrupting, making ripples, splashing the scene and be like, all right, I got my photos. I'm out. Like he's like really right, outside right, like right. that. So if I were to like, kind of be around him, how he talks to people and like how he yeah. obviously photographs people, that would be a huge honor. But I feel like I'm not like his type of friend. Like I might be like too like soft and he'll be like, you gotta yeah. get up and people, you gotta talk to people, man. Cause I'm like,
yeah,
I'm, like
yeah,
I'm so
yeah,
scared.
Yeah.
Like I hate it when people yeah, make eye contact yeah. with me, like all this anxiety. And he'll probably just like yell at me and then I would like cry. But Bruce Gilden is like a fascinating guitar. His work is yeah. so inspiring to me. He really yeah, knows yeah, how yeah. to, really knows how to photograph emotion and honest human expression, in my opinion.
I mean, right. there it's insanity. Like some of the photos that he gets.
And
like,
I was just looking. I was like, oh, yeah.
He is
like,
up I think in people's it's the, grill.
Oh, 100%. And like you said, there is a lot of his work that's not as, you know, abrasive mm-hmm. as that, but it's still like, I think it's the Coney Island, like beach area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's like a bunch of stuff that he's done on there. And it's just some of the most phenomenal, you know, it's just like everyday people, the normal people. It's like he kind of gives them a voice. And it's like the people that we all see all the time. Yeah. Like it's just amazing. It's amazing work. Mm-hmm. I get how people can be upset about it because it really yeah. is like a flash in your face yeah. or yeah. he is looking for the kind of extreme angle. And again, like you said, it's the people he's like talked to and like lived with yeah. his whole life. Mm-hmm. Like he's got that right.
Good answer.
Thanks. Yeah. Great answer.
Good answer. Yeah. Good answer.
Good answer.
Oh man. So this is the two-part camera question mm-hmm. that everybody just loves so much.
Mm-hmm. It's on my shirt.
Yep. Yep. It is. The desert island.
On an island.
Yeah. So part one of the two-part question is the one camera that you can't live without. It's your desert island, ride or die. What will it be and why?
I think a lot of people would assume that it would be my M6. I own two of them because I'm a dork.
Whoa.
And I love different variations of things that I love. So like shoes and cameras.
About to be three. About to be three. Gonna get
but
that new one.
The favorite camera that I cannot drop for the life of me is the RZ67. That is my favorite nice. Camera yeah, yeah, of yeah, all yeah. time. I am a portrait first photographer. I always explained that my street photography is kind of like as if you let a portrait photographer out in the jungle and that is what he got. Like that yeah. is how I would describe my style. So the RZ is the perfect machine for that. It has given me the best type of work, not because of like the image quality, although fantastic for Mamiya. It's just because of like yeah. how people react to not having a face behind a gigantic camera because like I'm looking over it. So they look right. like they're just looking into an inanimate object so they don't feel intimidated. So I made great work with that. The RZ is always yeah. going to be like in my arsenal if I were to sell everything or be on an island.
Man. That's good. Yeah.
You know, I was just saying, I just did a portrait session for a friend of mine. He's a musician. And I brought my RB out like for the first time to like yeah. on a shoot. And I was like, whoo!
It's great, right?
This is a whole different mm-hmm. thing. Whole different
it's
game.
It's so fun.
Because I don't ever really, that's the only 6.7 camera I have.
You don't have, I thought you had a Pentax. No?
No, it's my Pentax 645.
Oh, Pentax 645. Okay, okay.
Yeah. So yep. I understand
yes,
the hype.
Yes.
It's great answer. a legendary camera.
Yep.
So part two is the white whale. Is there anything that you've always wanted to shoot or own, and or maybe you did shoot and you just like, it's like you're obsessing over it. You want one, you need one, you have to have it. Is what's that going to be?
Oh, that is a great question. I don't think I've thought of that in a while.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
You're not tortured.
I think there was a phase where I wanted to get the MP because I shot it in the Leica store. I'm like, whoa, this feels different. And like to most people, it's like, it's not. It's the same as your M6.
Which Leica store did you?
The LA one.
Let me play with it.
They have an MP and an MA. The MA also feels very different. It feels extremely snappy.
The MA is like snappy. The M3. It's basically like a fancy M3 with all the frame lines.
Exactly. It's fantastic. But I won't say that my white whale is either of them. I think my white whale now, in regards to the scale project that I was telling you about, is what's it called? It's something. It's an 8x10 camera, but I'm looking at
Chamonix.
Chamonix 8x10. Like that is something that I've been like looking at, but I'm like, oh my god, it's so expensive. And I'm like,
and the film is so expensive.
And that is like all of us who before we buy, we're like, why is it so expensive? And like in my mind, I'm like, there's like hardly any mechanics in it. It's literally a box and bellows and a ground glass, but there's something about it that people really like, and the 8x10 would be a fantastic tool for that project that I mentioned. It'd be super cool to get like either individuals or group stuff, all that stuff. That 8x10 is, but like it'll take some time. Like I can easily wait on that easily.
I could see that doing some wonders for that work though too, because there's just something about shooting large format, especially 8x10, that is, it's the real deal. I mean, when you're whipping out an 8x10, you're spending that money, you're doing all the, you know, it's like this guy is serious when they
as if the perception of someone even holding an RZ or a Leica, they're like, oh, this guy's serious. Like when you whip out the 8x10, they're like, oh no, he's really serious. That dude is definitely living outside of his car or living out of his car. He's serious.
Yeah, literally.
Selling a kidney and a man, great answers. Cool.
Well, Chris, this has been fantastic. Like I said, I'm so glad we got you finally scheduling. We're all worked out and we were able to get you on the show. It's been awesome.
Oh my gosh, it has been an absolute honor to speak with you too. Have fun. Like, you know, like kind of like get into our bag about why we do what we do and what we're currently up to. It was an amazing conversation. I loved it.
Awesome. Where can everybody check out the channel? Are you on? What's your Instagram, Twitter? Plug yourself.
Of course. So you can look me up on YouTube, Chris Chu. My last name is C-H-U. And my Instagram is Who's Chris Chu? W-H-O-S Chris C-H-U. Find me on Instagram there. I also have a Twitter, but I don't really use it because Twitter is a horrible place to be. And it's just getting it's getting even more swampy by the minute. So I'm not really on there, but you can find my handle.
Everybody's got a blue check mark.
I know that was so dumb, but I think they pulled that back like the other day.
So dumb.
Anywho, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Cool. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, I'm on all the things, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, I think. Just go. It's at Timothy Makeups. I have a bunch of stuff there. I also have some like old archived YouTube film photography related YouTube videos. Just go to the search bar, type in Timothy Makeups. You'll find a bunch of my stuff there. Chris, where are you?
So I am Chris B Photo on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Grainery, all the things.
Grainery. Chris B.
And we are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter and Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram. Chris, Thank you.
It was a pleasure. Shout out to you too for making this happen. It was fantastic.
Amazing. Loved it.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye. First off, Chris and I would like to thank Chris Chu for coming on the show. We love what you're doing. We totally enjoy your YouTube channel. We love nerding out about Leicas. Just an all-around great episode, and we love what you're doing. We can't wait to see what the future holds for you. And again, thank you for coming on the show. Guys, it's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our Patreon-only develop and hang nights. We have a bunch of stuff in the archives there. So again, thanks to all the Patreons that already helped support the show. Patreon.com/analogtalk. That's going to be it for this week's episode, guys. We will see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.